there's some factor here, I forget what. So there's something like this, yeah. The most general, okay, these combinations are orthogonal and canonically conjugate. So this is the basic setup for a basis. So those two are inverse to one another and symmetric. So for any symmetric invertible H, this gives a pair of canonically conjugate orthogonal basis forms. And then if you ask for it to be conformally flat, you get two solutions. You can either have H equal to its trace over M times the original metric eta, or you can have H equal to, oh, I forget what this form is. There's some coefficient here.
What is that? H, little h or n? H is,
yeah,
the trace.
Yeah, H is the trace.
Oh, okay.
That trace.
Oh, I see.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So that's just a definition.
Oh, okay.
It's some function. Some function, whatever it has to be. I'm not sure about this coefficient. That H goes down here. And, I mean, let me just put some constant here because I don't remember. But then you have the YA, YB thing. Now, something like that. Although, at this stage of the calculation, all you really know is that this is some vector. So I think you have this form for some u, but you don't know as much about u as you eventually do. You don't know that u is linear in y, something like that, where y is a coordinate and u is just some vector. So
you are some vector.
No, you are some vector.
No, you is the vector?
I are infrared.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's... We could go on all afternoon that way.
Why?
Yeah. Why, eh?
Why? Why?
So what happens in the time paper is that you find that this solution, or this solution, is a signature changing metric. So H is the induced metric on the submanifold spanned by these guys, assuming these guys span submanifolds. But what I was, what I think was the case over the weekend is, if I take this choice and put it in here and calculate the resulting structure equation, they're not invalid. And so, hey, you.
Did you get Candace's email?
No.
Was that your earlier?
Oh, yeah, what happened? I didn't get it. What?
She missed you.
Yeah, I noticed that.
But then she said when she was looking at the time that you're teaching, it didn't even make sense for what time you wrote down.
What I wrote down?
12:30?
12:30. Well,
because your class
12:15 is what I meant to write.
Well, you wrote 12:30, and she said it's over.
Oh, no, you're right. It was over.
So
then.
Can you come at 12:15 on
12:15
Wednesday?
Wednesday, fine. Yeah, that'll be fine.
Okay.
Okay. So I'll give you guys some time. So this is anyway showing that that's not involute is one of the things we might do. The other is looking at half integrals for fields.
I don't know what this class is. It's quantum field theory two.
Two. Yeah.
Which number is?
Is what's one?
I have
69, 40.
Does that sound good to you?
40.
Does that sound right to you?
Well, 69, 30 is
you're
is
the only
one.
Looks like one. The only one that has your wits about you. I know these three. So
69, 40. Wasn't it 30? 30 is quantum field 31. It's 30 and 40. I know it ends in 30 and 40.
Okay, well,
69, 40.
3500.
I think you're right,
Kit. It's a tenth side. I think I lost it anyway, you know. Oh, really? Okay. One of them was specialty was particle physics. I invited him over and he kept his hand. Did that him? And he gave two lectures, one for the general public and one for, like, loose people, you know, student stuff. And both times, the auditorium was like, looks like what, you know, looks like what they have over in, you know.
Yeah.
It's just huge. Packed,
yeah. Good book. What are you going to do for Joe since he's the only one who has to mark undergraduate?
I feel haze.
When it's combined though on the thing, I think it's going to be...
All the comments are...
The comments are all be different. You're killing that.
And the part where you put copies in food in class, it's a mistake from lecture senior.
Well, you got all but one, you know.
There's always.
I could bring this by later.
You want to do that?
Yeah, I'd rather.
Okay. I'm just even ready to go.
That's okay. Whatever.
You
good?
Yes,
he's writing the next
set.
Cool. All right. Thanks. All right. So we could express the basis in terms of the conformally flat metric and try and see if it involutes straightforward problem, but more or less the next thing I'm thinking about. Or let's see, we could look at half integral thing and try and take a field theory limit of the particle half integral and see what happens.
I'd be interested. My talk on Wednesday will start with that as a nonsense, the field half integral.
Yeah. Okay. Now, if there are any questions anybody has on anything, you know, actually relevant, ask. Then we can look at that. These are just some suggestions for what we do today. But then I haven't prepared anything, so we'll just do whatever strikes our hand. So shall we look at that? So pick up on the path integral thing. Let's see if we can take a limit and see what happens. Okay, so let's see the path integral. We had a transition amplitude from x final to t final. Or from x initial to t initial. Alright, that transition amplitude the standard d is just a path integration, functional integration instead of the action. And the action itself is a functional of
Can we talk about that?
Sure.
The d. What does it mean to say that it's a functional integration as opposed to?
Okay. So this is the product. Yeah. that infinite product integrated over infinity to infinity. And so it happened to be that set of phases was the function we're integrating. But that's what I mean by that symbol, I think. Now, often, like for T minus V type Lagrangian, I think I mentioned you can do the momentum integration and they look like Gaussians because the kinetic energy is P squared over 2m. So you do all those Gaussian integrals and you get some factor here and you're left with just the configuration space path integral, where there's actually a funny normalization. Well, if you think of, what would one of those Gaussian integrals look like? You have dt e to the I over h bar. You're looking at something like, p squared over 2m here. Maybe it has the right sign to make it look like a Gaussian. Plus other stuff, you've got a potential term out here. But you want to do these Gaussians, and then this is time epsilon, right? At each time you have an integral like this, it's an integral over all t. So, suppose the m's one of these integrals. By the time you multiply all of them, the exponent here ends up being a sum over all n. So basically, this epsilon becomes the dt, and this turns into an integral.
Mm-hmm.
But if you back off a step from that, so this is just the epsilon is just t n plus 1 minus tn, and you take them all to be the same, right? And each one of those is equal to what the total t final minus initial over, let's say the total number of intervals, something like that, is what that step is. Well, you're taking capital N is going to infinity, epsilon as a result is going to zero. But you can see that what happens is, some constant, but there's going to be like a square root of epsilon in the denominator when you do that integral. Just Gaussian integral, typical thing. But then you get a product of an infinite number of those. So this is going to look like integrals over spatial paths, but then you have something like 1 over epsilon to the infinity over 2, as epsilon goes to 0. So, Sakurai's synthesis is saying it's got a peculiar measure. But, it's a very peculiar measure. It's a horribly divergent thing, but it's just as easy to show that the integral over dq will cancel that factor. So, it doesn't matter. It's just a normalization. And it comes out finite for a wide range of potentials, so it's not actually a problem. But if you try to write what that factor is, it looks like very bizarre. It's one over dt to the, an infinite power. Okay, let's not take the limit yet. So you just, put some factor in there, and it does very nicely cancel. Like you do a simple harmonic oscillator. Two Gaussians, only let's look at the simple harmonic oscillator, because that's the prototypic thing that we're always looking at, right? You've got p squared over 2m, 1 and a half, kx squared, dt. Alright, so your action is something like that. And let me see, how does this go? Yeah, okay. By the time you back off to this level, I think what you're looking at is the way you get this P is you have a half MV, so it's XM plus 1 minus XN squared over delta T squared times delta T minus a half KX squared delta T. So you cancel one of these. So the momentum one has a 1 over delta T, and the position one has a delta T. And that's a, you know, as long as the potential is V of X, you've still got that multiplying delta T. So the delta T, that's the epsilon, comes in the opposite way in the two cases. So maybe what I wrote here should be thought of in these terms. So then you're going to integrate over all X, and the two terms give off the contribution again. So, are there other questions on this? Is that enough?
Would you mind doing an example of a path integral? Like, for example, free particle or something? Yeah.
Yeah, free particle is probably what we should do.
Okay.
So, let's try it.
I'm curious. I see an example, right?
Hey, before you dive into an example, the potential term, is that different in each exponential term in the series? The integral a little bit lower, where
here.
You've got this. Are there a bunch of exponential terms lining up?
Yeah, this is V of Xn.
Okay, so there's going to be.
So
infinitely many of these.
Yeah, that's right.
So
you're in a product of like infinite integrals, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know of any computer or human that can do that.
They can do it well enough to, you know, get within a percent or so of the mass of a proton.
There's a cutoff, though, at a certain point, obviously.
Let's see. So what is the question?
The question is, how do you do an integral with an infinite number of products?
You set it up as a finite number, although, you know, tiny separation. You do the integrals, and then you take the limit of an infinite number of them. So we'll see in the free particle example how we actually carry it out, because you just have to do it.
Okay, so the second line is not what you do in practice. It's the first line.
Which?
The one with the product there is what you're actually doing.
Yeah.
And this one below it is...
So you do this integral, and then you take this limit. Let's try either a free particle or a... Yeah, we should probably try the free particle and see what happens there. Let's give it a go. The result, you can do it, okay? I think you can do those two examples exactly. And you get some expression. It's not actually all that enlightening. You know, it's just some, that function, all right, this is that. It's done in Feynman and Hibbs. Right, they worked through some examples there. But it's nice to see that you actually can do it, and that all these limits actually end up making some sense and giving you some finite results, which is, you know, maybe worth going through. Let's see. The real applications are in field theory. And, you know, it gives you a way of quantizing any theory for which you can write an action. So, if you have some field equation that does not follow from an action, it's probably wrong because there's no way to quantize it. The quantum theory is ambiguous, but, you know, quantum theory is really there, so you should worry a little bit about that. But it also means that for a huge number of theories, hey, there's a way to write down what the quantization is. Okay. So, let's try and carry this out. Now, Juan, do you have your notes from this to handy? Because I need an intermediate expression, like the limit. Maybe I can write it, but...
Well, I can pull it up. It's in my computer.
We want to recall this. Oh, okay. Here we've got some notes. Let's see if that does it for us.
Oh, okay. I don't know where I put my notes.
Yeah. Okay. So the thing we got was lots and lots of integrals of dq's, you know, we had this dq1, dt1, to dq, and what we wanted to be, or what the minus, I think it's minus 1 that we got to, one says plus 1, one says minus 1 here, what did we really have? N minus 1. Then there's actually an extra dp 0. I'm not sure why that was there. And then we have the exponential of I epsilon over h bar, the sum on m, I guess a generic one here to be m. And then, let's see, what was it? PM. QM plus 1 minus QM over epsilon. So we multiplied and divided this term by epsilon. And then minus the Hamiltonian at Cm and 2m. Times that epsilon. I think that's what we ended up with. And that difference, so this is like the velocity. So, you know, pq dot minus h is the Lagrangian. And then this epsilon is your dt. So the limit of a sum becomes an integral. So I think that's what we've got. Okay, thanks. All right. So we want to do this for a free particle. The Hamiltonian for a free particle is just q squared over 2m. So the terms we have there will be minus dm squared over 2m. So let's see. What do we want to do? We're going to treat that as a Gaussian integral. So let's look at one momentum integral. So we want to integrate dtm, and let's see, the only terms there that we have to worry about, we've got this sort of quasi-Gaussian term. So minus I epsilon over h bar. And then Tm squared over 2m. And then what looks like a cross term. Let's see. Why don't I have a minus? That's a minus.
minus on the H. So, yeah, I'm pulling out a minus sign. We want to do that integral. And we're going to treat it like a Gaussian. Even though there's this funny I here, we can, if you imagine a Wick rotation, so if you take epsilon into the complex plane, so that I epsilon is real, and do the integral there, and then rotate back, that's okay. It turns out to be the same thing as if you just treat this coefficient as some constant times t squared and do the Gaussian. So I'll do that. So we have the integral dpm of the exponential of minus, and then we have I epsilon over 2m h bar dm squared plus everything else here. So our epsilon cancels here. We just have I over h bar qm plus 1 minus qm dm. I want to integrate by completing the square, right? So what happens? So let's just hold this constant out overall. And we have Em squared minus 2m h bar over I epsilon times I over h bar qm plus 1 minus 2m. Pm is minus a funny constant. And then I want to write this as 2m. See, I've got a minus here, so let's call it minus, and the 2 is good. So then what I want is this coefficient, the I cancels. That's nice. The h bar cancels. So this m over epsilon q m plus 1 minus q m. So I want that thing squared. So the cross term is going to be 2m over epsilon times this times that. That's the right cross term. But then I have to put back in this thing squared. So I have e to the, let's see, I get plus that term squared to the minus. I'm going to need I epsilon over 2m h bar times this thing squared. M squared over epsilon squared q m plus 1 minus q m squared. So, everybody with me? Have I done it right? Like, for example, gotten the right sign, cool things like that. And yeah, actually, that term surely is right. But we've got an I over h bar, and then we have a 1/2 m, then delta x over epsilon squared is the velocity squared times the dt. So this is exactly a 1/2 mv squared dt times I over h bar. So this is what we expect for the Lagrangian in terms of the velocity. But any questions on this? I'm just completing a square. Okay.
We are having two.
Oh, I want to do this integral. And okay, this is just a constant factor. That comes out of the integral. This is a Gaussian. So I let P be a change of variable, the Pm minus this constant. Where if we treat the Qs as constants, so then the integral is going to be in I pull out that factor, e to the I over h bar times 1/2 m q m plus 1 minus q m over epsilon squared. That's this factor. Times the integral over all dt, minus infinity to infinity, of e to the minus some funny looking constant t squared. And that's just a Gaussian integral now, so I want to do that Gaussian integral. And everybody with me? Any question? I think I'm just doing some algebra here. Okay, so how do you do a Gaussian integral? Anybody remember? So if I have dt e to the minus alpha p squared, that's going to be a square root of pi or something times something. Right?
Oh.
You guys remember the trick? You square it, right? So I squared is equal to, let's call it dt1 dt2 e to the minus alpha p1 squared plus p2 squared. So you write it like this, and then you go to polar coordinates. You're integrating over a plane, but you write it as the integral of some angle and some radius, but you need r d theta for the volume element, and then you have e to the minus alpha r squared. So the integral over d theta gives 2 pi, and you change the integral, right, this is 1/2 d of r squared, e to the minus alpha r squared, so you let y equal r squared, and you have pi times the integral of dy e to the minus alpha y, and we all know how to do that. Notice that the r integral runs 0 to infinity, the angle 0 to 2 pi. So we need 0 to infinity here, and we get minus pi over alpha e to the minus alpha y from 0 to infinity. At infinity, you get 0. At 0, you get 1 to the exponential. So it's just, as you can still see in this corner, pi over alpha. So this, all right, remember, this is I squared we were calculating. So I is the square root of that. So there's the integral of a Gaussian. Whoops. Okay. Everybody see the Gaussian integral.
Right.
Okay. So we good over here?
Yes.
Funny-looking thing. So what we get is the integral dtm of e to the minus 1, give this thing a name, a, there we go, is equal to e to the I over h bar times a half m and something that looks a whole lot like V. That times, what do we get? Square root of pi over that funny thing. Okay, so the funny thing has an IS1 here, as promised. And then a 2mh bar up here. Okay. So far, so good. Now, we take the we have an infinite number of those. And notice this would have been the same if there had been a V of X over here, right? Let's see, the Hamiltonian, so the Hamiltonian might have had a plus V of X in it, V of Q M here, times this same coefficient. Well, that's not involved, so that just comes out. So the result would be A times minus I epsilon over H bar V of Q M. So here we would still have that term, E minus I over H bar V Q M epsilon. So now we've done it in general for an action, or a Lagrangian T minus Z.
So what's that?
Okay, I was starting off for a free particle and I took the Hamiltonian to be this, but I could have taken it to have an additive potential. If I had, that would just add minus I epsilon over H bar times V. So it would only, that doesn't involve T. So it just carries through as a constant here, and the result would be to add this factor with that one. And notice what you've got, T minus Z, times, there's one more epsilon here. So what we have is now integrals over dq1 to dq, and minus 1 is added. And then we have these exponentials. We have 2 pi m h bar over I epsilon to the and why is n minus 1 exactly? Is it really n minus 1 or n? N is going to infinity. That's going to diverge anyway. But we get this same factor. This doesn't depend on n, right? It doesn't depend on which of these integrals we did. They all give us that same normalization. So we just get that to the nth power. Then we have this exponential, e to the I over h bar. Then we have the summation on M, quantity 1/2 M Q M plus 1 minus Q M over epsilon squared minus V of Q M times epsilon. And you notice that sum, now this is quite literally the action. I mean, that is the integral of the Lagrangian as a function of the coordinates only. So this is where you really truly identify L. So, you know, we're out of phase space and we're into configuration space. Question, Ron?
We lose on the epsilon, right?
It may be, yeah, I did. Yeah, you're right. There's an epsilon here. It was here, right? An epsilon squared to this in the denominator, and then an epsilon in this. So yeah, I dropped an epsilon, but we got this back. So
is it n minus 1 because we have that, this is where we have that integral.
Well, we had an extra p, didn't we? So, I'm thinking there were n of I. And, all right, the thing now that happens is when we try and do this one,
suppose we're integrating 2m. It actually occurs in two terms because of this finite difference thing here. You have, you know, this is a function, right? 2m occurs in the first term in the m minus 1 one, and in the second term in the m one. And those nicely cancel out. That works just right. It may be that takes care of the m minus 1 here. I'm not sure. We'll see. But the other thing that might I'm not sure where Z is evaluated. Hey, yeah, come on in. Just drop it there by my backpack.
Cool.
That's fine.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So, the double wheel hasn't quite worked out yet, but
okay, yeah, I'll have a look at it, you know, when I yeah, tomorrow I guess I'll get a chance and I'll sort that out. I'm wondering if you know, that calculation of delta was totally spurious, and what we should have done is define E0 to be whatever energy solves the equation with tan equal 1.
Yeah.
And then let the tan be the only perturbation away from that.
Yeah. I know, I think the delta might have worked out, but I think if we didn't assume that they were both, or assume sine for each delta, and just said that it was plus delta A and plus delta S,
yeah,
it would have worked out. Like, the way I have it down,
right,
I assume the signs and it.
Yeah, but you know, it worries me that the difference only really happens when you do have the tanh there. It might not be enough to just do the inequality.
Right.
So anyway, I'll have a look and I'll get something. I'll sort it out tomorrow.
Cool. Thanks.
Sure.
Yeah.
See you. Yeah, we were doing a double well potential. You know, you've got just an infinite square well with a square bump in the middle,
mm-hmm,
and you know, trying to get a good estimate for the energy separation of the lowest symmetric and the lowest anti-symmetric state, and it's a real exercise in perturbation theory because you have these linear, you know, algebraic perturbation and an exponential perturbation, and the difference in the splitting of the levels only comes in with the exponential terms, which are much, much smaller than the algebraic perturbation, so you have to be careful about how you treat the perturbation. It's an interesting problem. I still haven't quite sort of the way to do it, but anyway, different problem. Back to the path integral. Now we want to do one of these. So, look at one. We have the integral dqm for some m. Let's not worry about this factor is just a constant, so I just want to look at this exponential. And what do we have? E to the I over h bar. And most of these exponentials aren't relevant. As I say, only two of them are relevant. We have a half m q m plus 1 minus q m over epsilon squared. And we have one where there's a half m q m minus q m minus 1 over epsilon quantity squared. Those are the only two terms here that have q's of m in them. Then we have the potential, well, let's see, so now we have to really decide whether we're doing a free particle or a simple harmonic oscillator or something. Let's stick with free particle, I think.
Did we lose an
epsilon? Yes, keep losing that epsilon. Let me stick it up front, maybe I won't lose it so often. Thank you a lot. We'll set the potential back to zero here. I think that when you do put a potential in, you sometimes see it taken as the average qm plus qm plus 1 over 2.
you evaluate it at the average of the two. If there's a difference, that's probably more correct. But we're going to set to zero and just do this. So we spread this out. So let's call this DA. And then we have DQM. The I. Got the epsilon. There it is. Good idea to stick it first. Let's see. Then we have a 2 and an M here. And then, what's all of this? There's a. There's an epsilon squared. I can pull that out. So we've got Q M plus 1 squared minus 2 QM Q M plus 1 plus QM squared plus QM squared minus 2 QM QM minus 1 plus QM minus 1 squared. How about that? So we're interested in these terms that have QM in them. Actually, the first and last terms just come out. So we'll have an overall IM over 2 H bar epsilon, then QM plus 1 squared, and QM minus 1 squared. And then the integral in QM. So we'll get two quadratic terms, e to the IM over H bar epsilon QM squared. Minus twice Q M plus 1 plus Q M minus 1 times Q M. And we want to write that as by completing the square. I'm wondering about the signs here. Are the signs right? I suppose they are. So we have minus c squared over 2m there, but now we have plus.
That minus came from the minus sign for that you subtract Hamiltonian.
Right. But then the sign on this half empty square came from completing the square. Did I get the right sign when I completed the square? Okay, so I'm adding, subtracting. Seems like it did. Yeah, this will fix it. Is it right?
I don't know. The second term. Oh, because it's squared.
So, yeah, completing the square, I end up adding the square of this term, and I have that minus sign. So I have minus the square of that. So I had the square of that. So I did this right. But I'm just going to stick the minus, the I down. So if we come off by an I in the end, there's probably a sign error someplace. But if this works out fine, then we'll just be happy. So let's write it that way. So I put this I down so I could stick a minus sign there so it at least looks a little like a Gaussian. that's red line. Now, did I miss the board?
Yeah.
So
that's
M minus one.
Yeah.
I was looking for that.
So this is m minus 1 squared. Yeah, that's not right.
There's no qm then, is it?
No, we integrated the qm.
Oh, okay.
But there's... There's a factor funny somewhere. Where did it go? QM. So, a half M.
Why is there not a half on that? Where do we lose the two? To the...
Right, so I want to multiply and divide by 2 here, right? Because I want to combine this exponential with that one. So okay. I want the coefficient.
No, right, but I think back here we should have had a 2 on it. Inside the integral, I think we're missing the 2.
Show me where.
So from this, the line above that, we have a 2 in that. Yeah. The coefficient of that whole thing on the exponential, back just a little bit, yeah. So there's a 2, a half there.
Yeah.
And then the next line is gone.
Oh. Oh. Maybe that'll help. Let's see. So that should just be here. Is that
I think so.
Okay. I don't see why not. Let's see. Here we're... Yeah, we pulled out the half term. Then we should have... That's right. Okay, that same coefficient with the QM. Oh, there are two QMs.
So
that's why I can't. But I should have canceled that.
Yeah.
That's it. Okay, that's the problem. So I was right to cancel this 2, but I should have canceled that 2 as well, because there are two QMs.
Yeah.
Right, that's the one I was canceling, but then I forgot to cancel the 2 here. So there's just one of these. That's better. So now, the term I add to complete the square needs to have a factor of, let's see, is it a quarter? I'm not sure what it is yet. Let's see. So if I have 2m minus the square root of this, the cross term will have a 1. Yeah, so... then this should be 1/2. So when I square that, the cross term cancels that 2 and gives me this. Then the term I have to add has a quarter of this on this last term. So there's a quarter here. Then that's my substitution. I do the integral, that's fine. Then here, what I want is a half of, let me see, there we go. Oh, yeah, I'm multiplying by, I'm pulling out a half, but I have a half left now. That's it. Good. So I square this sub out. Let's just write this again. So I pulled out half of the quarter out here. And now I'm going to get minus 1/2 qm plus 1 squared. And I'm going to have minus 1/2 qm minus 1 squared. And then the cross term is minus 2 qm minus 1 qm plus 1. And I write that I pi h bar over epsilon, h bar epsilon over m exponential minus I m over 2 h bar epsilon. Pull out a half and do it. Pull out a half And then we have 2m plus 1 plus 2m minus 1 squared. Now,
there's no,
this is pretty close.
There's no minus. The first two terms of the second to last line should be positive. Ah!
These are bigger than that, right? So those two are flawed. And so we have a difference here. That's good. So I take out a half, make that a quarter, and now it's just the difference between those two squares. Yeah, it should be replicating this. It should be the same thing except 2m is gone.
Okay.
Right, so we jump right from 2m plus 1 to 2m minus 1. So we've eliminated 1 except, you know, we've... And the only thing I'm worrying about now is that normalization. We've got, let's see, I epsilon over...
The m's cancel out.
Oh, okay, yeah, the epsilons are right. But we have a quarter mv squared instead of a half mv squared. So now I'm worrying about one more factor of 2.
To the n should be to the big n over 2. Right?
Yeah, because it's the square root. That's it. Yeah, I was worrying about the factors of h bar, but they're okay because this amplitude is dimensionless. At some point, h bar has been set to 1 here. This is dimensionless, but the path integral we wrote had dp dq to the n. So there should be a 1 over h bar to the approximately n, multiplying the whole thing to make it dimensionless. So if we put the h bars in, and it's possible there are some 2 pi's in there as well, because look, we're getting factors of 2 pi here, we're also getting factors of pi in the numerator here. So even if we correct the factor of 2 and get 2 pi, so it's probably... I would guess 1 over 2 pi h bar to the n that should be the coefficient here. And you can fix that by normalizing p's and q's to be dimensionless. So that looks like it's working out. The epsilon and the I, we have an I epsilon here, we have an I epsilon in the numerator, the masses cancel. So the integrated factors are going to be fine. So now, I'm still thinking that somewhere in the x integral, we've lost a factor of 2. That's a half. Now,
is a factor of 2 missing from the second term exponent. So
here?
Yeah. Because it's 4, so minus...
It's 4, but I pulled out a 2. I canceled
a
2.
Oh, okay. Never mind. I'm sorry.
Two,
yeah.
I have 2 here, canceled a 2.
2, and then 2 turns there.
The,
okay,
the,
put
the explicit 2s go, and then we have a sum here that gives us 2 terms.
Okay, sorry.
Oh. Oh.
1 times 3.
I see where it is.
And then 1
times 3. We did it right. Put the epsilon, epsilon squared. I don't know about in here, but here we have minus I over h bar. We have our epsilon, and then we have, oh, now we've got too many. No.
Where'd you put it back in? Epsilon.
We have 2m plus 1 minus 2m minus 1 over twice epsilon squared. Because the time interval has doubled. So we need to get the velocity, we need 2 epsilon at the time. So we need a 4 down here. Now we've lost a half. So now we need a half. But I don't know, is that a conversion series? 2 to a half, 2 to a, no. Let's see. And there's still a ham here.
2 m. 1 time.
So the 2 squared, 2 epsilon squared.
Yeah, the 2 epsilon squared. Yeah.
So you get a 4.
But, yeah. So, yeah. So now we're wishing there was
more.
another half of the mark.
The minus sign on the last 2?
Yeah.
Where is that from? I don't think it's supposed
to be there. On the last 2.
There's a minus.
Let's see. Okay, yeah, what did I do here? Oh, we changed that, right? So, and that agrees here, right? I have one and M. So the only thing, yeah, so we still need the half MV squared.
Don't we need the, I mean, so we're going to combine this with,
Okay, so this goes back in here, right? And the point is that you can knock out one of the intervals, and you just skip over it, you know, that one's gone, and you still are doing the same thing here. The only difference is you pick up this factor. And... see. You know, that's, you know, it's going to be 1, I suppose. Let's see. So what happens?
We do not have to root of 2 that we have to map there. Near the epsilon.
What? Up front? Where?
Near the epsilon there. Square root of 2. Here. You have the 2 epsilon.
Here. So we square it, and that's 4 epsilon squared.
You have to have 2 epsilon squared?
Yeah. Because the distance is twice as far. Right? So, yeah, it's like a coarse graining thing where we're going 2 time steps at a time now. When we go from 2m minus 1 to 2m plus 1, that's 2 time steps. So this is the average velocity over 2 units of time. So what's going to happen here, so your final exam is to find this missing factor too. But, yeah, and I wonder if there isn't supposed to be one in here as well. So that makes me suspect that we lost it early on, earlier rather than later. But this should have been the right starting point. So, you know, it should show. But, okay, let's talk about what happened. This was one of the Q intervals. Now, we're going to do all of these, and what happens is each time we do one, it replaces, it eliminates one of the intermediate M's and doubles the time interval. Let's see, maybe, that's it, doubles the time interval. We put a 2M here over 2, a 2S1, okay. We have I over H bar. The time interval is down 2 epsilon, and we have 1 half M average velocity squared. That's it. So we did it right. We did it right. It's just that, yeah, all of the epsilons have to go to 2 epsilon now. So
you should put a 2 over here then in the factor.
Here.
Do you want one in there too as well?
No. Let's see, we didn't legitimately get one there.
Okay.
Did we? Because this is the Gaussian we're doing.
Okay.
The ultimate answer here is in terms of the overall average velocity. You actually have a factor here where it's Q final minus Q initial over the total time is what emerges from this as the finite path integral for a free particle. It actually involves that difference. Let's see if we can figure that out to get that to emerge. So this is looking right. I'm a little worried about there being a root 2 missing in the normalization. That I did that Gaussian right? That was the correct. It's not like a 2 pi or something, right? Yeah. Okay. So so be it.
Does it come in? I mean, does it come in with where this? So you have this factor, that factor is still there. There's still a factor up there with, like for instance, the 2m plus 1 factor. Okay. There's another factor somewhere else that has qm plus 1 in it. That's not the only one with
qm plus 1. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, then there's a qm plus 2 minus qm plus 1
and
squared.
So those... those two things are going to have to...
Yeah. So, I suppose one way to think of it is, like, go through and do every other one first, so now you have the same path integral with just 2 epsilon spacing instead of epsilon spacing. Let's see. What do we do? keep doing that. Presumably what we do is we do all of them. And these were all finite difference things. So for any capital N, we can just do all of these integrals. And each time you do two adjacent ones, you're just incrementing the time interval. So if we were to do that one, suppose we combine this one and try to do the qm plus 1 integral now. There is another term where we have qm plus 2 minus qm plus 1 over epsilon quantity squared. And so the qm plus 1 integral will involve that one and this one. And
what should emerge from that is now qm plus 2 minus qm minus 1 over 3 epsilon squared. So we just get the same thing with the average velocity from qm minus 1 up to qm plus 2. And we keep iterating that. And each time we should get this same normalization. So the whole thing then, T final initial, T initial, alright, we're going to have 1 over 2 pi h bar to the n. We have that factor is 2 pi m h bar over I epsilon to n over 2. Then we get this factor approximately n over 2 times I pi h bar epsilon over m to the n over 2. And it's crucial that both of these come in to the n over 2, because we are taking epsilon to 0 here. And unless we pick up one from some other, you know, these could be off by one if there's one we pick up from the last integral or something. That I don't want to get counting. You know, you can keep careful track of these and it comes out just right. But then time, what are we going to be left with? The exponential of I over h bar times 1 half times m times what is the average velocity q final minus q initial over the total time t final minus t initial squared. And then there's some the final factor of t final minus t initial from this accumulating time. So all of the epsilon should cancel out. The other factor should cancel. I'm worried that we're actually left here. If we don't have another 2 here, then we're left with 2 to the n over 2, and then goes to infinity, and that gets big. So there's another normalization by 2 somewhere that we haven't gotten. This is the right sort of expression. I think you might just get a date like this. Juan, you can check it in Feynman and Hibbs. You know, they work this out, I'm sure. I'm pretty sure they also do this in more Monte Carlo. But you really can't do these things. They really do come out finite. You get some expression in terms of the initial and final positions and times. And so there's a patent goal. Done explicitly. The thing that happens in field theory is you really only have to do this once, and then you're done. In field theory, let me pause there, ask if there are any questions here, and then I'll talk a little bit about the field theory picture. Yeah.
Should we get this because all the initial values, all the intermediate steps cancel out, right? Because in
yeah.
The sum, okay.
So you just do them one at a time, and
right.
You know, what you end up with after each integral is just the average over, you know.
You have to subtract the neighboring.
Yeah, the next one up and the next one down,
right.
Just sort of look in and take over. So you're constantly integrating the same thing. Now, yeah, there's definitely another set of steps to seeing if you really do. You could do them 2 at a time, I guess. So if you did the next tear down, then it would replace. Yeah, let me try and make that argument. So you do this procedure for every other integral,
you know, m and m plus 2 and m plus 4 and so on. And what you're going to get is a bunch of products of things like this, where now the time interval is doubled. Okay, now do every other one of those. So take half of them at a time, do every other one, so that what will happen is the time interval will keep doubling, and then we'll be up to, you know, m plus 3 minus 2, m, you know, minus 3 or something like that, and then we'll have a double time interval again. And so you keep doubling that time interval until you've hooked up the whole interval. So I think that's close enough to rigors to satisfy. The net result is you end up integrating out all the intermediate times. Let's choose to divide it into 2 to the n different intervals so that that scheme works out exactly right. Then you end up with this funny looking phase over kind of an average kinetic energy times the total time as being the probability amplitude for going from here to there. Other questions on the particle case, three particles?
Is this the famous renormalization problem?
No. Can you really do quantum mechanics with a half interval kind of question? The whole book Feynman and Hibbs wrote, Hibbs was one of Feynman's students, you know, that wanted to see, well, okay, you know, you come up with this half integral expression, can you actually solve for some of these things? It was, I think, the book that was probably written in order to convince people that this really was the workable theory of quantum mechanics. Where it came into full-on value, you know, is when you get to field theory. Because if you say, well, what we really want to be doing is putting in a field action, you can. It gives you a way to quantize a field theory. And it allows you to develop the perturbative theories with Feynman diagrams from the path integral. A quick book to read on this is Ramond, R-A-M-O-N-D. That's a nice one. It starts right out with field theory path integrals and develops their various properties.
Is that one the primer?
Yeah, I think that is. Yeah, quantum field theory, a primer, or something like that. Is that the name? Yeah, I think that's the one. So, other questions here?
So everything here should cancel out, right? All these factors?
Or, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, these should cancel. So I'm pretty sure we're missing a 2 here.
Oh.
Where it comes from.
Okay.
There should be a 2 there. I just don't know why.
2, H, R. Okay.
You know, and then everything really does cancel.
And you just get that e to the IO rage bar, et cetera, right?
So that exponential is all that's left.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure that exponential is the right answer. You can double check that, but you really got most of it here.
If we have a how do we interpret it, that then, like, to find the actual probability, we should square the
phase, right? Yeah. So the so
it's 1.
Doesn't much, yeah. But if you're computing the expectation that I get some operator, you know, something like that, then you know you can use this to compute some other thing. And if you put in the harmonic oscillator potential. Right now, it does something a little more interesting. Well, you know, it is a free particle. You know, what's the probability of finding it, you know, at any point? Well, they're all equal. But some appropriate normalization, it is 1. So this is okay. A pure phase for a free particle is probably what we should expect for a probability amplitude. Simple harmonic oscillators. They're
should get zero. there's a probability for detecting a harmonic oscillator. There's a probability of measuring it at any final point, but it's higher near zero, the probability. And the thing you can do with these, though, is, you know, when you start doing perturbation theory, and now you treat the potential, for example, as a perturbation, you can still use this result, and then you perturb around it. So, let me show you a little bit of what happens in field theory, just how that works.
I read the technology of the story.
What you end up doing is, it's a thing we did where you end up with a time-ordered product of fields. It's like an endpoint correlation function. So you have your path, your field exponential in the action times some field product. And this is why you go to this interaction picture. So in field theory, the transition amplitude, you know, from phi at t final, you know, phi at t initial is now you're going to end up integrating over the field, over all the values of the field, and you'll have the same, I'm not here, silly action. But what's the field action look like? You're going to have something like, let's just look at a scalar field. Plus m squared, y squared. Let's take a Klein-Gordon field. Think of this as an operator. So if you integrate this by part, du phi plus m squared phi squared, you can think of that as minus phi box phi. If you integrate by parts, so you have a free phi and a box phi, so what we have is a sandwiched operator. Phi and then minus box. Let's think of it as a Gaussian. So minus 1/2, and then an integral of phi box minus m squared phi. And what we're going to do, you know, the integration over space is just a sum over parameterization. What you're really ending up doing is you're off in some field space and you're going to integrate this thing over all phi. And now that looks like a Gaussian in phi. So what you're going to get when you do this is something like 1 over the square root of pi over the coefficient, where the coefficient is some operator, x minus m squared, something like this, and you get a product of an infinite number of these. So it's something like 1 over the square root of an operator. Now, you take a product of a bunch of these things. Okay, now,
imagine diagonalizing that operator in some, you know, choosing a basis so that operator is diagonal. Then what you're getting are, you get 1 over, let's see, how does that work? I'm not remembering exactly how this goes. The product of an infinite number of these leads to 1 over the determinant of that operator. You're basically taking a product of all the eigenvalues of that operator. So what you end up with is something like 1 over the determinant of that operator to the 1/2. Well, okay, that's something workable. Now, suppose you have a potential. You can treat the potential perturbed. So, with a potential, some G of phi, our transition amplitude, we can write as G phi e to the I over H bar, and now we write this as integral of, what do we call this, the Lagrange density of 0 plus some potential in phi before x. And we expand in that. So you write this as d phi e to the I over h bar l naught times the power series I lambda over h bar to the n factorial fine. It's actually like the Dyson series. We worked out the Dyson series before, and you know this is what you get powers of this thing, which generally, you know, for a polynomial potential, this is going to be products of fields, possibly evaluated at different points. Right? We worked with that when we were deriving the transition amplitudes. When we were we ended up looking at a time-ordered product of fields times the potential term, and when that potential term came in, then we actually got some stuff. That's what this turns into. It turns into just that sort of thing. So once you carry this through rigorously, then you pick up with what we did in Maggiore. You can also do it from a more mundane expansion. You don't have to do the path integral formalism to get to where we got to. We didn't do it, but you can. And what happens here is you still get to use like 1 over the determinant of that operator. That part still works out the same, but then you're going to end up finding an expectation value of a product of multiple fields. You can do this. Let's see. You can do a functional differentiation. You know, you expand this in a functional Taylor series. You expand that extra stuff that way, and it becomes a power series in phi. So the usefulness of the path integral ends up being, you know, taking this basic free particle Hamiltonian or free particle Lagrangian and figuring out what that is. That turns out to be something fairly simple. It's just this determinant thing. But then you get these corrections that you can evaluate using finite path. Yeah, it's pretty. I haven't looked at that. Ramon, I'm pretty sure, does a nice job of describing all of that, and I haven't looked at it in ages, so I'd have to refresh myself on how that goes to do that for you. But yeah, you know, we can pull that out sometimes. A very interesting thing happens when you do a fermion field. You do the same kind of thing. You still have a psi bar of psi, so it's still a sort of a Gaussian thing, but by the time you take into account it's all fermions and stuff, it turns out to be the square root of the determinant of the Dirac operator to the plus, the determinant of the Dirac operator to the plus a half. So if you have a supersymmetric theory, you can get those determinants to cancel. If you balance the fermion field and the scalar and the bosonic field, the determinants work opposite one another and go away. So you can actually simplify the expression by having both bosonic and fermionic fields in balance.
Why do we, when we do fields, we're doing the size, we're not doing the conjugate momentum field, whereas when we do classical?
That's a very good question. I was just wondering the same thing myself.
Why?
Thinking about how you go from, right, dx, dq, dp, right? So if you go to a many-particle system, you're going to have a dqi for each particle and a dpi for each particle. So it will be a product of all of the dp's and all the dq's and a product of those for each particle. And now you're going to take a limit of that, and you can see how you would end up averaging over every possible value of the field, because the all of those different dqi's are going to coalesce into field values. So I think you're right. I think your intuition there that what you're going to get is d of phi and d of pi in the path integral is probably the right way to think about what should happen. Maybe we should take a look at Ramon to try and sort out how we do this and see if there shouldn't be some curvy d of pi in this as well. He might have that. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like it should be there.
Right. But I'm not. I mean, we've been looking at this stuff. I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A primer. Yeah. That's right. Okay. Not sure I can say much more on this without. Yeah, Ramon or something.
How do you spell it?
R-A-M-O-N-D.
Okay.
He's at Gainesville. Works with Tom Curtwright.
Okay.
Tom Curtwright does this database quantization. Which is similar to some of what we're saying. Not, does quantization in the database. It'd be nice to see that in a field theory sense.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that means. So, okay. Good. done yet.
Okay, how do we serve the conference room?
Carolyn,
not Carolyn.
I mean, the physics office.
It's upstairs.
Upstairs. Yeah, okay.
Second floor.
You know where the physics office
yeah.
is? Yeah. You know, Mike, if you go in and Mike gets the third door back on the left, kind of down that hall. But you can ask the front desk, but Carolee can answer.
Right.
Can actually, I don't think anybody in the office there can serve it. But I think Carolee's the one that actually has to go.
Tell us for this class, you know. So.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, nobody else has got it then. Forget it.
Okay. All right. So, which day are you talking Wednesday?
They're talking Wednesday.
Right? Right.
Oh, okay. Wednesday, Friday. I'll be Friday then.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Cool. All
right. See you later.
See you. Product by normal ordered product plus propagators.